Please share with me in the reading of the scripture from Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is the word of the Lord. It was a no-brainer about what particular version of the 23rd Psalm I would pick for us to say. Of course, it was the King James, the one that if you grew up in the church, you probably memorized as a child. It's the one that most families choose for a memorial service or a funeral. It is the one that I can remember mostly, most of the time. And it is that which goes to the heart of who we are. It resonates in the symphony of amazing movement, this wonderfully poetic psalm. The version most people think they know, however, isn't always what we know. And in fact, I read that one child, probably six, thought that the verse that reads, "Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life," what she heard was, "Surely good Mrs. Murphy will follow me all the days of my life," which was completely appropriate because good Mrs. Murphy was her nanny. For most of the psalm, it carries this weight, which is a bit of surprise when we consider how little we know about sheep and shepherding. I wonder if the psalm were written today, if it would not change the metaphor. The Lord is my care provider, I shall not be uninsured. She maketh me to lie down in the doctor's office. She leadeth me to be vaccinated, she restoreth my antibodies. Lots of choices to fill in for the sheep and shepherd part, yet as anachronistic as this is, David, the shepherd, accordingly wrote this psalm as a pastoral metaphor for what a shepherd and a sheep experience. And I think he still nails it. It is pastoral in the sense that it is pastoral. That is, on the range, on the green grass of where the sheep are fed. And even though we don't know that much about sheep, the Bible gives us really all we really need to know how important this text is. And it turns out that we have a lot more in common with sheep than we would like to admit. Even though the modern interpretation of being sheepish is to be someone who is maybe slow or mindlessly follows others, as the Urban Dictionary defined it, a waste of flesh and brain cells. According to the truth, it's more that sheep are smarter than we think and very obstinate creatures, hard-headed and foul creatures, prone to wander to wherever, you know how it works, the greener grass is on the other side, only to get lost in the process. And whether we can admit it or not, no matter our age or our net worth or our family name, we all need shepherding. As I did this morning at 8:46, when the phone rang and I'm in my apartment and I am getting dressed for the 9:45 worship service. Only it was at 8:45. And so Stacy Pulliam shepherded me right out of the apartment as fast as I could get here. You're not going to believe it. I made it in time. I have absolutely no idea what I said. We all need these shepherds. If we believe the Bible, we, like sheep, were called to flourish most when we live in sync, in harmony with our good shepherd God. We're called to know his voice, to follow his way, and to depend on his grace. We rest in his breath as the source of life. We rest in his love as the source of our true sense of identity and who we are. And we rest in his will as the source of meaning, purpose, contentment, and ultimately joy and security. This is hard for Americans because we buy into the cowboy myth of I'm a lone ranger, I'm born under a wandering star, that sort of rampant individualism that is so much a part of our American mythology, to admit that we cannot do it alone. I have a close friend in Charlotte who admits to having a drinking problem, and he's even been to rehab. But he is too sheep-like stubborn to admit that he needs AA, a sponsor, or even a higher power. He's convinced he can do it himself. He hasn't, and he can't. He refuses to give in to needing others for help, hides his drinking, or thinks he does, leaving him lost and alone in his lies and deception. I have another close friend who doesn't seem to need much either. According to his faith and church he attends, he believes that he has God in his back pocket. He's got all the answers, he has the faith and all the righteousness he needs, he's accepted Jesus Christ. Plus, with that, he gets a get out of hell card free. It wasn't exactly free, of course. Protected as he is by all of the righteous religious armor, you cannot get close to him. You can't have a human conversation with him before he's building his point. There's nothing vulnerable or human to connect to. He's just like a robot who's been indoctrinated into one of the many religious cults that requires absolute certainty. It just seems so sheepish. He doesn't even need the world and the earth and the planet. He's been saved from all that. He's waiting for the rapture. And he claims that if we have dominion over the earth like God gave us, and that way suck all of the earth dry, that the apocalypse and the rapture will come sooner than later. That's what he's been taught. When his wife couldn't stand it anymore, she left him, and his back pocket God suddenly disappeared. He's been wandering around like a lost sheep for a year or so, probably just the right amount of time for him to come to know how sheepish he has been and how much he truly needs to come back into the fold. We are all like sheep. We have all gone astray, Handel wrote. In the way of the Good Shepherd, the way that God wants us to go is to follow the voice of Christ, who loves us with an everlasting love and is willing to lay down his life in order to free us from all of the dark valleys of the shadow of death that we get lost in. The good news, of course, and it is nothing but the best of news, the good news is that that process doesn't always feel so good at first. And if we live long enough, we might be able to admit that we were proud and full of hubris and righteousness, and that actually we were lost in all of that, my way or the highway, for that is the way of perdition, as they used to say, wandering around in our own little valley of shadow of death, alone and afraid and alienated, with no map or no compass to find our way out. You know, it's just not a great way to go through life. Jesus says in John 10, I am the good shepherd, building on the 23rd Psalm. I am the good shepherd, and also I am the gate through which you were led out to pasture. I am the gatekeeper, he says. The sheep hear my voice and know it is the shepherd gatekeeper. I call them by name and lead them out. I am the good shepherd, Jesus said. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. I am, he says, six times in just that passage in 10. In John, when Jesus says, I am, that is the verb for God. I am who I am, the Yahweh meaning. And Jesus is claiming that God's voice and my voice are the same. And if you want to know what God's voice sounds like, listen to me. And if you want to know what God says, I'm saying it. And his way is a way of suffering, but it's also a way of freedom. I don't think there can be freedom without it. This we must be clear. Sometimes it feels like when we're being released for our freedom, it feels more like hell than heaven. Anita called yesterday as I was trying to make sense of this sermon, as I was doing this morning at 8:45, with a problem with our printer in Jacksonville. Apparently a piece of paper had been caught in the carriage and she didn't know how to open the printer to get to it to pull it out. So I shepherded her through the process. She was able to open it. She saw it and said, what do I do now? And I said, well, you just take your hand and reach out and pull that sucker out. Just rip it out. She did, freeing the paper and the printer and bringing them both into paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Often when we get lost or stuck, being set free feels like being ripped out by the awesome grace of God. But it is way less painful in the long run than not being ripped out by the grace of God. Like those who were stuck in rage or cynicism or despair or addiction or conspiracy theories, until something comes along with the hand of God, like it did for the prodigal son, like it did for all of the members of the Bible, like it did for Peter, and rips out the stasis of where you are stuck. And the next thing you know, you are being moved to a whole new place. Until that happens, we really don't know the power of the Good Shepherd. The thing is that the Good Shepherd will just let us stay there until we're ready. Doesn't force its hand on us until we're ready. Until, as the prodigal came to himself and was willing to suffer that ripped outness and turn around with hat in hand and go back home. The Good Shepherd will not force us out of that. Good Shepherd will walk with us through the valley, but will not force us. The Psalm makes this clear. We walk. Sometimes we walk a long time through that valley. And when we're ready, God will lead us out. The God that walks with us. No one can answer why the shepherd God will not always protect us from the storms and wolves of life. Apparently, sometimes yes, and apparently sometimes no. We cannot theologically understand it. For some reason that we do not understand, God, the Creator God, the Holy Other, the ultimate power of all that there is, was, and ever shall be, for some reason we cannot fathom. God chooses to be like a shepherd with us, who does not have enough power to completely always protect us from the storms, any more than he could protect his son. For me, at least, it's not so much faith that I need to get through those times. Faith is important, but for me, faith seems more like an intellectual endeavor, more like belief. It's not, but it feels that way sometimes. If you have enough faith, if you truly believe, these things. For me, it's more like trust. For me, faith is more like trust. Do I trust in the shepherd God that walks beside me, even though I do not always know or experience that presence? Can I keep trusting even when I am in that dark valley? Having gone through several of those myself, one particular, when Nancy, my first wife, died in a car accident, I cannot say that I experienced God's walking beside us the whole time. In fact, the hardest part was I experienced a lot of God's absence, as I could understand it. But I kept reminding myself of this story, the Good Shepherd. And then as I got further and further out of that dark valley and back into the way of life, I was able to recount my steps to look back and remember the light that was leading us forward, even though I didn't know it was the light of God. After Nancy died, each night, Megan, Amanda, and I would gather on my bed and have a prayer, and it was this simple. We gave thanks to God for getting us through the day, and we prayed for God's shepherding hand to get us through tomorrow. And we were able to pray that prayer every night until we didn't need to anymore. And what happened when we didn't need to is that because of God's shepherding presence with us, we were able to claim a strength we didn't know, that God is stronger than we ever thought, and that we are stronger than we thought. Which brings us, I think, to one of the most important parts of this psalm that we often overlook. Yes, we like sheep, but I think God waits and expects for us to grow up and evolve into also we like shepherds. God's intention for our creation, for God's creation, is for us to evolve into being shepherds for it. And isn't it time for us to live into that image of God given to us in 1 Corinthians and ratified again in the Garden of Eden, when they are called to care and tend for creation? Next to us, sheep are probably one of the most destructive creatures on earth. They have no concern for conservation, choosing to rip up every source of vegetation they can get their greedy little mouths on. If you ever watch a Western, who are the people who always get hammered? Well, not the cattlemen. They're like hammering on the shepherds and the sheep. Not the people, they're hammering on the shepherds. And why? Because sheep have no sense of boundaries. That's why fences got built. Besides that, they're not far-sighted enough to see that when they're chewing in all the land, they're giving up their own self-interest. There's no conservation. For that, you need a shepherd. Nothing is more clear to me as I get older, the biblical mandate that God's creation was created good. Over and over again, every single atom, every single grain of sand and dirt, every star in the heavens, all the universe or universes, all of it created good. And that we were created set apart, not only good, but very good, in God's image. Which means, I think, in the image of God, to be a shepherd too. even if it means we give up our life for the sake of the world. It's now without argument that we have failed our task of shepherding. Since Thursday was Earth Day, let me say how I have grown to dislike that distinction. We set aside one day a year and call it Earth Day and think we're paying our dues. Every day we should wake up and claim it. The fact is, I mean fact, disconnected as we are now from our earth and ground, ungrounded, whatever the reasons, technology, machines, processed food, institutional, agriculture, sitting on our fannies and looking at screens, we are wandering deeper and deeper into the valley of the shadow of climate death. It turns out that the saddest part of all this is that there are a whole lot of Christians in our world who don't even care. Somehow the issue of stewarding the planet got lost in party politics. Some Christians on the right, fundamentalist and evangelical, not all but some, have been taught that our job is to save souls, not the planet. And the reason to save souls is because at the apocalypse, God will destroy the planet in a great fire and it'll all turn to dust. And so we in the rapture will be lifted up into the new heaven. But what they're not remembering is that it is not only the new heaven, it is also the new earth. They've been told that nature doesn't matter and that it is a pagan movement, that you're a tree hugger or a liberal. If you're pro-life, you cannot be pro-environment in that politic. If you're a patriot, you cannot be a conservationist. Environmentalism has been pigeonholed into one particular party, and the culture wars continue to destroy our planet, and both parties feed it over and over. As members of the New Covenant, friends, that's who we are. The New Covenant, as Christians, it calls us to be stewards, to give up our political insanity and see how idolatrous such party politics has become. Our affiliation is to the kingdom of heaven, not the kingdom of the Democratic or Republican Party. This is also a social justice issue. Jesus is clear. Our job is to help shepherd the last, the least, the lost, the hungry, the naked, the poor. He says it over and over again. The Psalms say it over and over again. It's all through the Bible. We're called to shepherd those who need help. It's a social justice issue because as we destroy the climate of the earth, it is the poor people who have to pay the price first and most. In India, farmers are committing suicide at a huge rate because the industrial agricultural machine there has taken over, destroyed the topsoil, and controls the seed, the fertilizer, and the process. The mountaintops of Kentucky that used to be mountaintops are now blown apart and produce more coal, leaving the land barren and bare. I heard somewhere that 50% of the topsoil in our world has been eroded. The media doesn't help because they're part of big business. But you know, there are a lot of CEOs all of a sudden who are stepping up and writing how important it is for us to take this seriously, because they know you cannot destroy the green pastures and survive. The Security Department has stepped up, the Defense Department has stepped up, but the Christian church in many ways has not. Yes, there are destructive passages in the Bible about how it will all go up in smoke, but those are symbolic signals and metaphors. What we've lost is the larger story, the meta-narrative from the beginning of Genesis to the end of Revelation, that it is God's plan and purpose to take this creation and recreate it in a new way, just as Jesus was recreated in a new way with a Jesusness that was him, but with a newly created body. Body matters. And when we destroy it, we're destroying that which is the foundation upon which the new creation will be built. The scripture is vitally concerned with sustainability because it matters. I heard an interview on a podcast recently by an evangelical theological professor at Wheaton College. She's also a Hebrew professor. She's also a scientist who decided with a biologist at Wheaton. Wheaton's a great school. It's right, probably one of the top evangelical schools in the country. Just a great school. And she and a biologist decided to teach a class on how can you be true to science and be true to faith and the Bible at the same time. One of the problems is that some part of the church says you cannot trust science, therefore COVID's a hoax and you don't need to take the vaccines. Science is a hoax. But there's a new part of this evangelical church that's starting to get it. And so they taught this class with 25 students, and they went around the room and asked, tell us what your name is and where you came from and what your major is and why you've decided to take this class. And each of the 25 students said exactly the same thing. They said, I grew up in the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts, or my family used to always camp out. I love birds. I love animals. I love creatures. I love trees. I love the world. I love the seas. On and on. They talked about how connected they felt to nature. And then they said, we wanted to take this class because all of our life in our Christian church, we were told that we were not allowed to advocate for endangered species, to care for the earth, and be a Christian at the same time. 25 out of 25. And the two teachers looked at each other and said, me too. You can love the earth, just don't give in to bad theology. This part of the church has been placed in a position where members are called to stay like sheep instead of becoming like shepherds of God's full creation, as the Bible makes clear. So the time has come for the church not to remain silent on these issues of stewardship and to shirk our responsibility to God and this world. We are losing one of the most powerful evangelistic moments in my generation if we do not do this as a church. I cannot tell you how many people I know who no longer claim themselves as Christian because the church continues to defy the facts. Dr. Richter, who taught this class, as I said, a deeply believing Christian evangelical, ends her podcast by reading from a secular environmentalist whose name is Gus Speff, who was chairman of the Council on Environmental Quality under President Carter, founded several environmental organizations, and is a total insider on the issue of environmental concern. At his retirement, he said, I used to think that the top environmental problems were biodiversity loss, ecosystem collapse, and climate change. I thought that 30 years of good science could address these problems. I was wrong. The top environmental problems are selfishness, greed, and apathy. And to deal with these, we need a cultural and spiritual transformation. A cultural and spiritual transformation from an agnostic scientist. And then he finishes, and we scientists, we don't know how to do that. Do we? Yes. And it is our calling, if there is any calling I know of now, for us to become the stewards of just such care. The Lord is my shepherd.